Well, you join us here live at the Crucible Theatre Sheffield for the 1991 World Bigotry Championships. Well, with me I have last year's world champion, London cabbie, Reg Beavis. Reg, disappointing day for Britain, Norman Tebbit being disqualified for repetition, and then the big shot, hot favourite, Degsy McMahon, slipping up in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, Degsy made a basic error.
This is it coming out now.
Because the thing, like, about the SDP is that they're class traitors who have betrayed working people. Now, critics say there's a lot wrong with the Labour Party, and I accept that.
Oh, dear. Dreadful bit of bigoting there, you know, accepting someone else's point of view. I mean, he'll be sick with himself, you know, a basic error, but then what can you expect? All scousers are stupid.
Turn of the big Irishman, so let's have a listen to him.
The people of Northern Ireland will not stand for this gross interference from Westminster in their own affairs.
Well, this is, I mean, John O'Rourke is the finest ranter in the business, you know, and at the moment he's hit a purple patch denouncing the British government as a nest of scorpions and vipers, you know.
Is John Catholic or Protestant?
Impossible to tell. But basically, you know, a lot of people fancy the big man to take the title back to Ireland where he belongs. You know.
What about Margaret Bland, the housewife from Sidcup?
Oh, she's just a woman.
Oh, there's a murmur in the crowd now as it's the turn of Pick van der Blonk, and away he goes.
My friend, I am telling you this.
Oh, yeah, well, of course, when it comes to prejudice, you know, the South Africans, class of their own.
Yeah, and Pick doesn't restrict his talent to just vilifying black people. Oh, no, just listen to him getting stuck into zebras.
I'm telling you, those zebras, they want to take our land away from us. They want to sleep with our women and run the country. But I'm telling you, we will not be pushed around by a bunch of stripies. Because the day a stripey can sit on the same park bench as a white man, that's the day. I am telling you, that is the day that the blood will flow, my friend.
I mean, marvellous, you know, superbly bigoted stuff. And he said, right, you can't trust those bloody zebras. That's what I said.
Well, it's good to see you haven't lost your touch, Rich.
And they're all communists. The other one, I mean, Cav one.
Yes, thanks, Rich. And now, over to Ted Lowe at the snooker.
Well, you join us at a quite critical stage here now. Jimmy White leads Stephen Hendry by 4-2, and Jimmy now has a great opportunity to put together a big break. He's just deciding which ball to go for, and yes, I thought so. He's going for the round ball by the top pocket there. Ah, yes, beautifully done, beautifully done. But now he wants to go for the round ball by the middle pocket. But it's masked by two spherical balls.
Well, we leave the snooker there, as I think Ted may have developed a colour blindness problem that he's not seen fit to mention to any of us. In the meantime, back to the studio. It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show, and here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel.
And welcome to the show. But first, some late news. We've just heard that a NHS Trust Hospital in Plymouth is refusing to accept elderly patients with walk frames on the grounds that they get stuck in the turnstiles.
And later on, Senator Ted Kennedy will be explaining how his walking has improved since he discovered that trousers can fasten round the waist.
Well, Nick, so...
Hey, Andy, please. Don't call me Nick, OK? From now on, I have to be known as Nizza, OK?
Nizza Rebel.
Nizza.
Oh, I see, Nizza is a sort of nickname.
Not only a nickname, Andy, it's also registered as a trademark. Anywhere in the world, right, if anyone wants to use the word Nizza, they have to pay me for the copyright.
For the word Nizza?
That's 50p you owe me.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. You seriously think there's going to be a marketing spin-off from your stupid nickname?
Why not? Why not? My publicity profile's growing all the time. In the eyes of many, I am regarded as a bit of a cult. Oh, and I've also copyrighted this.
Yeah, it's your tongue.
No, no, just my tongue, Andy. See, I'm also crossing my eyes, wiggling my ears, and picking my nose. And this facial activity, ideal for photo opportunities, is now officially categorised as doing a nizzer.
Right.
In a couple of months, I'll be as rich as Gazza. You'll see. You'll see.
Nizzer, listen, I don't know how to break this to you, but I'm afraid that you and Paul Gascoigne had nothing in common apart from your IQs. You are a non-entity known even within your own family as what's-his-name. Gazza, on the other hand, is a national figure, someone who gets recognised in the street.
I get recognised in the street.
Yeah, but only by debt collectors. Let's face it. The whole idea is a non-starter. Excuse me, little girl. How much is this man paying you to behave in this ridiculous fashion?
10p?
10p, that's shabby.
It's called promotion, Andy. It builds up media interest. Anyway, you've got to excuse me now. I've got to go and punch a sun photographer.
To create hype.
Well, do you need a reason, then?
I suppose not. Fair enough. Right.
Well, we interrupt the £1 million radio show just for the hell of it to bring you episode one of our radio version of The Darling Buds of May, a series full of evocative scenes of country life.
Excuse me, Mr. Larkin?
Aye, Potlarkin, that's me. What can I do for you?
I'm from the Inland Revenue. I'd like to talk to you about your income tax returns. If you just fill out these forms...
Ah, no, you see, filling out forms, that's for city types. What, to spend their time in stuffy offices, see, like you? No, I live my life according to the rhythm of the season, see?
Yes, I quite envy you.
Yeah, yeah, out here a man can live carefree and happy, at peace with himself and at one with the land and it, and in harmony with the beauty of nature. Listen.
Gosh, yes.
See that? In that oak tree there? It's a nightingale. Got the bugger.
You shot it?
Oh, yeah, we always shoot nightingales, yeah, yeah.
Well, why are they a pest?
No, we country folk just likes killing things, you know. Oh, look, an earwig.
Well, I really need to talk to you about your tax affairs, because there's a...
Hello there.
This is my wife, Ma Larkin, yeah. She's just bringing the feed for the chickens. They only get the best, our chickens. Look at that. Oh, yeah. Pure 100% hormones, that is perfect.
Hello.
Oh, and this here is my beautiful daughter, Mariette. Isn't she lovely?
Yes, she is.
Want to have sex with us?
Well...
Why not? We all do. Like to keep things in the family, doesn't we, country folk? Now, you hurry along, Mariette. That slurry should have been sipped in that stream hours ago.
If we could return to form... I noticed you have a vehicle, namely one rather battered-looking van. What exactly is that used for?
Well, what else do country folk use their vehicles for? It's for driving down narrow lanes, blind drunk, till you hit something, huh? You honestly, you're a real townie. Hey, you look glum, friend. What's the matter?
Well, it's just... Well, this isn't how I'd imagined the countryside, somehow. I thought life out here would be blissful.
Idyllic. And it is, believe me. Tell you what, here, let's take these bottles of beer, right, and some of Mars' finest turkey pie, and let you and me go and sit in the top field. And there we'll watch the corn swaying in the soft breeze.
Well, that does sound rather nice.
Yeah, and then we'll listen to the merry gurgle of the brook, and the light soothing song of the lark, and as the sun sets over the trees, and the corn turns a kind of burnished gold, we'll watch the badgers come out and play in the evening mist. And then, once the badgers have finished playing, we'll gas them. Gas them and bludgeon them, yeah. That's country life for you, perfect. Come on, hurry up. If we're lucky, we might catch some ramblers and then we can set the dogs on them.
Well, you can hear episode 2 when Pop Larkin chops down a grove of ancient oak trees so we can plant oilseed rape and get an EEC subsidy at the same time next week. But now we return you to the £1 million radio show.
Welcome back. Later on in the show, we'll be meeting the dog trainer who has become a millionaire teaching pit bulls how to impersonate French poodles.
And we'll be discussing the question, is Michael Heseltine a self-seeking careerist? It obviously won't be a very long discussion. Probably just have a show of hands, though. Well, we'd like to make a change of tone now, because with us, we have Julia Hodges, who is from the charity Feed the World. Now, Julia, you are currently organising a massive airlift of food and medical supplies to Sudan and Ethiopia. Is that correct?
Yes. It's a new initiative to try to stave off yet more disaster, because the famines are now dreadfully serious.
Right, right. Now, and let's get one thing perfectly clear. This is a British initiative. I'm right in saying that, aren't I?
Well, a lot of British relief organisations are involved, yes, but there are French, German charities and some from other EEC countries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, what form is the emergency airlift taking?
Well, food and medicine is being loaded onto the Hercules aircraft and dropped onto those areas where people are quite literally dropping from starvation.
Right, and let's get this perfectly clear. They're British planes being loaded by British personnel.
Well, yes.
Flying from British airports in Britain.
With respect, I think there are wider issues in the British involvement.
Which is considerable.
We have to ask ourselves why this situation arose.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reluctance to heed the alarm signals about this famine, yeah. And I feel one can only put that down to a failure of political will.
Right, and let's get this perfectly clear. This failure of political will was a French failure, was it not?
Look, you keep harping on this jingoistic theme. I've told you there are French, Germans, lots of nationalities. Do you understand?
Yeah, yes, yes, I do. What you're saying is this shouldn't be seen as a purely British operation. It's really an international effort.
Exactly.
Mind you, I bet the Germans haven't done much. Stand around bossing everybody about it. Making all the refugees form straight lines and sing the whole special song.
I'm sorry, I just can't think any more of it.
Nicking all the deck chairs. Well, Julia Hodges has left us rather suddenly there. Probably got a Mersey flight to catch. No doubt on a British plane.
Nice interview, that one.
Thanks.
Show we've got a caring side.
I think so, yeah.
Very tasteful. Well, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we can now bring you the news that when Georgia voted for independence from Moscow earlier this year, Dan Quayle sent a message of congratulations to the mayor of Atlanta. But now...
Nick, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but... Would you mind taking that stupid baseball cap off? It's like sharing the stage with a Channel 4 youth presenter.
I'd rather keep it on.
No, just give it here. Give
Andy!
It here. Dominic, what happened to your forehead?
It's a tattoo.
Uh-huh.
I was doing a gig in the States and I told a joke the audience didn't like much.
Well, what was the joke?
Well, I just simply said, well, ladies and gentlemen, I was worried the Gulf War was going to last longer than it did, because, you know, last time the US military were in action, it took them 9 days to overcome the military might of Panama. In my country, we have soccer fans who could have done that in an afternoon.
So what does the tattoo say?
82nd Airborne.
And is that gag to an audience of American paratroopers?
Yeah. You've got to be tough in stand-up comedy, Andy. You've got to have a thick skin, you know.
What, to soak the ink up?
Well, anyway, I followed up by saying, you know, the Gulf was the third war that the United States and Great Britain had fought together this century, but only the first one where the Americans had had the decency to join in on time.
And then what?
Dunno. Woke up 4 hours later, naked in a ditch with a Hershey bar stuck up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We get the picture, you know, repulsive as it is. But but apart from that, right, the trip to America went well then, did it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, in L.A., I had a wonderful time. I was staying with my uncle. He's a millionaire. He made his money selling chalk to the Los Angeles Homicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And I like New York. I had a great evening that night, actually. I met Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah.
At a comedy club, yeah.
Comedy
club? Yeah, well, you know Woody Allen's really heavily influenced by Bergman. Mm. You know? Well, what a lot of people don't know is that Bergman is really heavily influenced by Woody Allen, you know, and we were on the same bill.
Well, Ingmar Bergman doing stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
Well, what's he like?
Interesting. His rubber chicken down the trousers routine needs a bit of work.
Mm.
And he hasn't really got the hang of light bulb jokes yet, you know. Right. This is one of his. How many Swedes does it take to change a light bulb? One. It's not really one you laugh out loud.
No, you sort of smile inwardly, yeah, yeah.
He's got a great closing bit, though. Are you ready for this one? Knock, knock.
Who's there?
I don't know.
I don't know who?
I don't know who either. Maybe there is no God.
sort of a slow burn, that one, isn't it?
Deep.
Over a couple of weeks, probably.
And now it's time for How to Annoy. This week, How to Annoy a Glasgow Rangers supporter.
Hello, I must get this right, mustn't I? Celtic is the team where all the players are Catholics, and Rangers are the team where all the players are English.
Well, some surprising news now from the BBC about the series MasterChef starring Lloyd Grossman. Apparently, they've just discovered they've been playing the tapes at the wrong speed. Explains the voice, really. Well, Jean-Pierre, well, you know. Explains it. Actually, I was watching the other night, yeah. You know, Grossman attempted the word wheelbase, and the news had to go on 20 minutes later.
Why are they turning that into a miniseries?
Yeah.
Like Grossman said, wheelbase. Anyway, here are the latest odds from Ladbrokes on the most likely person to be next president of South Africa. 25-1, Mr. de Klerk, 50-1, Nelson Mandela, and 5-2, Margaret Thatcher. Oh, so are you?
I'm sorry, mate. A bit tired. I had a bad night last night. Yeah, me and Libby were in bed, and one thing led to another, you know.
This book's very interesting.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's all about the way men and women fail to communicate.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Because men aren't receptive in conversation. It talks about how much men don't respond.
Good.
I never listen.
Mm-hmm.
I had sex with a grizzly bear today.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. Hey, did I hear you correctly? Did you actually say that men never listen?
Yes, that's what the book says, yes.
What book?
The book I've just been talking
about. Oh, right, that book, yeah, I thought you probably meant that book, yeah.
Well, it's fascinating. It says women see conversation as a means of sharing and discussing things, whereas men view conversation suspiciously as an attempt to influence them.
Where's all this leading?
It's not leading anywhere. I'm just quoting the book. Male attitudes to conversation are primarily defensive.
Well, mine aren't defensive. Why should I be defensive? I've nothing to be defensive. So you're saying I'm defensive, are you?
No.
Me, defensive, that's a joke. Anyway, it sounds like a stupid book, if you ask me.
Here's something interesting. Apparently, on average, men interrupt women at least...
Well, that's a load of cobblers, for sure.
What? Interrupted me.
I did not interrupt. I merely anticipated the end of your sentence.
Well, I wish you wouldn't, because I find it
really patronising. I know. Do you seriously expect me to hang on till the end of a boring sentence?
Oh, so my sentences are boring, are they?
Well, they would be if I let you finish them, yeah.
You are so typical. Men's attitude to conversation has nothing to do with communication, just pure competitiveness. I'm going to sleep. I'm tired.
You're not as tired as I am.
Oh, come on.
I'm telling you, you are not as tired as I am. If you were inside this body, you'd know you couldn't possibly be as tired as I am. You'd be too tired to read some book, for a start, and too tired to score silly points about how tired you are. Now, I'm going to sleep because I am incomparably tired. Okay?
Oh, for God's sake!
Look, I'm sorry, love. I shouldn't have snapped them. Yeah, you're right, and I'm sorry, look, I'll try to have proper conversations with you in future and not be so defensive, okay?
Okay. Night-night.
What's that supposed to mean?
Honestly, Andy, the way you treat that woman, I'm amazed she puts up with you. You treat her like she hardly exists, you know? I tell you, if I acted that way with...
Muriel.
I meant to ask you, how's it going with your grumpy neighbour?
Oh, you'll never guess what's happened with him now.
What?
Right, well, he's got a lovely ginger cat, right? beautiful thing. And you know how much Robbie loves cats, you know, because they do, at 11 months, you know. Anyway, yesterday this cat, right, is sunning itself on next door's porch, and Robbie spots him and crawls over gurgling, you know, because he loves cats.
Yeah, what, so he goes over and, what, strokes the cat?
No, he ate it.
Robbie ate next door's cat.
Yeah, yeah, it didn't go down too well with the neighbour, you know, but we were pleased because, you know, we've been trying to get him onto solids.
Yeah,
know?
I remember.
I think I've worked it out with Robbie. He likes to feed himself, you know.
Yeah.
Very independent, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how are you going to square it with the neighbour then?
Don't know, really. The doctor says it will be a while before he gets over the shock of seeing it happen, you know. And until he regains the power of speech, there's not much we can do, really,
right.
You know.
Uh-huh. Well, more late news. Following the announcement that shares are going to be available in Arsenal Football Club, sources in the city are saying that a controlling interest has already been acquired by Mogadon PLC.
Tonight, in an attempt to fathom the unfathomable, the Million Pound Radio Show brings you the truth behind the human body.
The human body. We all have one, and sometimes we visit other people's. And yet, how many of us really know anything about the immensely complicated ecosystem that makes up the human body? For instance, did you know that the brain is capable of 12 decisions per second? Or in John Major's case, none. And did you know that the human brain can still do many things that no computer can possibly achieve? Like sending a copy of Reader's Digest to the right address. Of course, the marvel of brain surgery means we now know a lot more about this astonishing organ.
Scalpel. Forceps. If I just cut... There it is, yes. So, gentlemen, you are looking at nature's greatest marvel. Human brain. A living electrical computer. Eh? Achoo! Oh, God, I've dropped it.
It's on the floor, see? It's rolled under the operating table.
Oh, dear.
What?
Oh, God. The cerebrum's been knocked off and the frontal lobe is torn.
That's okay. Dust it off and bung it back in. It's only Giles Brandreth.
Modern medicine, of course, can boast an extremely detailed knowledge of how our bodies work. Centuries of painstaking scientific research have produced a situation whereby a doctor can now tell you almost instantly that you've got a virus and there's nothing he can do. In medieval times, doctors laboured in ignorance.
Verily, Master Arbuthnot, thou hast evil humours. There's nothing I can do. Bed rest and plenty of liquid.
Surely thou canst give me something for it, Doctor.
Oh, very well. Lie on my couch and I shall bleed thee till the pain doth cease.
But thou bled me last time. I had evil humours.
And did the pain not stop?
Well, it did when I blacked out. I could not stand up for 3 months, and I was so pale I was thrown on the plague cart twice. Could thou not give me some more modern cures?
Such as?
Well, Silas Oldbottom's doctor gives him live scorpions, which he applies to the infected areas.
Live scorpions? I'm not wasting money on live scorpions. I'm a budget-holding GP. I've got my shareholders to think of.
But
I'm not prescribing live scorpions. I don't hold with this alternative medicine. No, you need a treatment that's clinically tested, sane, and rational. Now, eat these hot coals 3 times a day, and if there's no improvement by Monday, we'll burn you as a witch.
In the centuries that followed, science began to master the complexities of human anatomy, like the intricate nervous system which transmits the pain message to the brain. Of course, the brain can override pain. Indeed, research shows that the mind can shut out almost any degree of pain except that caused by watching David Essex act. Of course, ultimately, we may free our bodies from pain by winning the constant struggle with disease.
Well, Professor Bartram, we've examined in close detail the results of all your exhaustive research, and we too are convinced that you have discovered a completely new, deadly virus which attacks the respiratory system.
Right.
You've successfully identified its characteristics and structure, which brings us to the question of what to call this new disease.
Well, I thought that in keeping with scientific tradition, it could be named after me.
Yes, we saw that in your submission. It's just that we feel that
Bob's disease is slightly informal name for a lethal virus.
Well, I just wanted to take the stigma out of it, you know, give it a friendly name so that people aren't too scared to say, hey, everybody, I've got Bob's disease. I'm going to die, but I've got Bob's disease. And besides, some doctor with the same surname as me already has got a form of herpes named after him, so you see...
Well, we understand your thinking, but we feel maybe it would be preferable to name it after the first man who died from the condition.
Oh, no, not Cosmo von Schleiben-Schusterberg's disease. No one will remember that. Look, I tell you what, if you want something formal, why don't we name it after the laboratory in the hospital where I carried out all the research, OK?
Yes, OK.
So that's agreed, then. Bob's dad's disease did it.
We now know that the viruses in our bodies can be triggered by stress. Stress caused, for instance, by bereavement or divorce, or working under pressure for long hours without a proper lunch break, recording a radio program that stars a pair of inadequate adolescents, is produced by a twat who thinks he's Cecil B. DeMille. These are the kind of pressures that can cause stress. Some people, of course, put their bodies under excessive physical stress.
So, this year's Mr. Universe is Carl Schwartz from Detroit! Carl, congratulations!
Thanks.
You've developed your body magnificently.
That's right. I've now got 32-inch biceps, 28-inch neck, and 36-inch thighs. And I'm proud of what I've achieved.
Rightly so, Carl. Now, if you just care to step over here and collect the trophy.
Oh, I can't walk.
Sorry?
I can't walk. In fact, I can hardly move. But I look good.
As we enter the 21st century, there seems to be an increasing awareness that we shouldn't try to change our bodies. We shouldn't, for instance, try to amend the work of nature with cosmetic surgery, unless, of course, we look like Andy Hamilton. Perhaps at last, man has learned to accept the marvel of his own body.
That was a bit uncalled for, wasn't it? Well, that narrator just slagging off my look.
She was probably just trying to engage in a bit of witty banter,
yeah,
you know.
Anyway, what does she mean?
Well, I suppose she was maybe referring to, you know, your neck. Or rather the place where you should have a neck.
I have got a neck.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, all right, my neck may be a fraction on the short side.
Andy, you make Gladstone Small look like a giraffe.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
It's not a big deal, Andy. All I'm saying is that when God was handing out the necks, you were at the back of the queue, that's all.
I see. And whereabouts in the queue were you, Nick, when God was handing out the noses? Right at the front, I say.
Andy.
In fact, I think God rested on the seventh day because he was shagged out after making your nose.
Andy, I'm not going to get involved in this, but I do not have a large nose, okay?
No? Oh. What about that time at the zoo when they asked you to leave because you were giving the anteaters an inferiority complex?
I think we'll end the show here.
Yeah, or the time the London Symphony Orchestra wanted to perform in your nostrils because they said it was such a magnificent acoustic.
I think we'll end the show here, Andy. Unless perhaps you'd like to tell everyone about how you used to work as Colin Moynihan's stunt double.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show was written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel with Felicity Montague and Jasper Jacobs. It was produced by Paul Mayhew-Archer.